Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path. Could you build a business that could thrive without you? Like, not just survive, like Sten can go on vacation for 2 weeks and the world doesn't fall apart. Is it sustainable and healthy without your constant presence? Therefore, you are truly more of a CEO than just a business owner with a job.
If you have a defined process, you just need to turn down clients that are asking you to go outside of that process.
If you're in this business, we're all running into the same issues. And there's an element of inexperience until you're forced to experience it, and then you learn on the fly. But then the best of us are like looking ahead. What do I not know?
It's embarrassing, but the most RIAs, you say, how many clients do you serve? And they say, well, how do you define a client? they can't tell you how many client relationships they're serving.
Welcome to this episode. We're going to be talking about operations today. What does it look like to be a financial advisor or a business owner? And I know for a lot of us, I'm trying to do both. How can I be a great financial advisor, but also run a really efficient business? So Matt has worked around the country, consulting a lot of RIAs, now works with one RIA at a high level, and he is their COO. So he's going to give us some ideas on what do we need to look for in a COO? What are some categories of our business we should focus on to be healthier? And really, I just want to sit in this with him and challenge all of us to say, we can't do this on our own. If you just want to create a busy job for yourself, you can be a solo advisor with maybe one or two staff. If you want to be a business owner where you run a company that can actually be healthy without your everyday presence, I know for me, that's the goal. And so what things do we need to have in mind as we think more like a business owner and not just like an advisor? Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. I know you have a podcast, so you know what you're doing. So we'll jump right in.
Sure.
So I know the things that you focus on, and what you are trying to communicate to the industry is not maybe what, as advisors, we are taught when we enter the business, which is you're a business owner. Here's how business owners think. I know at least for my story and a lot of peers I have and advisors I coach, it's you are a salesperson that just happens to sell things related to financial planning. So you're a financial advisor.
Yes.
Over time, you'll understand those products better. Probably over time, you'll become better at advising someone at a whole level, not just the product you sell. And then maybe someday you wake up and you're like, wow, I'm actually running a business just as much, if not more, as I'm giving financial advice on a day-to-day basis. And so I do think there's this natural average arc that the industry will kind of push you through, but I think it takes a long time. But the stuff you talk about is like, how do we get there faster?
Yep.
And so I'm looking forward to diving into that. So as you hear me explain that, like what comes up in you?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Most, if not all, RIA owners came out of the wirehouse or the BD world. And it was just, where's my next client coming from? All revenue is good revenue. They're not trained in those early parts of their career to think about profitability of clients. And so even though they're very successful in their careers and they're managing 1 billion, 2 billion, whatever it may be, that they still have that mentality of, I just need my next client. All revenue is good revenue. I'll take anybody.
So when in your journey did that shift happen for you? Like, was it like an aha moment, or was this something that you just from an early stage were like, the average path is all wrong?
So I got trained by, and I didn't realize how unique they were, but my first job, I fell into a very unique opportunity. I was hired by Merrill Lynch right out of undergrad. I had zero experience, but a team of four advisors had recently moved from Goldman Sachs to Merrill. And they had been there for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months before they hired me. And those four advisors were doing more business than the entire Beverly Hills branch. And so I was brought in with no experience. Hey, make these guys happy. They're frustrated. They used to know how to do business at Goldman. They don't know how to navigate Mother Merrill. Who do they call? How do they place an options trade or place a block trade or anything? So you're their operations point person. And they were I mean, again, back then we were in the Merrill Lynch world, but they were very conscious of the types of clients that they were going after. They had a decision early in their career. I mean, Goldman, you know, they go after ultra high net worth people. They told me very early on, hey, we could have gone like the retirement plan business. Mm-hmm. And a lot of advisors get lured in by those large AUM numbers. Yeah. I'm going to go get $100 million retirement plan, but mm-hmm. I can only charge 15 basis points for that. So they explained to me, and when I was 22 years old, we figured, let's go find $100 million family and we can charge 50, 60 basis points for. And that's a lot better, the individual. And so I was taught this very, very early on. And then we left Merrill, started our own RIA. We ran that for several years. And then they sold that business to First Republic Bank. And I didn't want to go I felt after we were an RIA for several years, I didn't want to go back into the captive environment. So I left right away as soon as we sold the business, and I went to Focus Financial, the big aggregator. And I was working in New York at the headquarters, and I got to fly around the country and meet with all the different Focus firms, and I did various operational projects for them. But it was at that time that I'm flying around the country and just meeting a lot of different RIA owners, and they were doing M&A. So some of my projects were, hey, we just acquired this business, how do we integrate it into our business? So I got a crash course into how the RIA world works, how the average. I mean, I'd only worked with these four guys really, and so when I really got a crash course into how the rest of the industry thinks, and I thought, oh, not everybody really thinks about the profitability of clients, and so that was sort of the aha moment for me.
Yeah, I think that one thing I see is that a lot of advisors are in little pockets, and we're all kind of repeating the same stuff, solving the same problem. And part of the reason I started this podcast was my realization of like, there's times where I felt like I was unique, you know, and like, oh, I have this unique challenge to solve. And I run into somebody else, like, oh, we fixed that 2 years ago. And I'm like, oh, like if you're in this business, we're all running into the same issues. And there's an element of inexperience until you're forced to experience it. And then you learn on the fly. But then the best of us are like looking ahead. What do I not know? They do behave more like business owners as opposed to like in the moment salespeople trying to increase their personal paycheck.
Yes.
And while that's not bad, and there's probably space in our industry for a while for people just to sell stuff and earn a living, most advisors that I talk to, if you do position what could be, they would say that sounds better than the job I've created for myself. And so with all the experience you've had, I'm curious to get in your head for our listeners, like start walking us through some of these recurring issues you've seen and coaching us up on how do we reduce the amount of pain that it's going to cause when we hit that point.
I think all of those problems stem from not knowing who your ideal client is. Start there. Who is, and again, that's what these guys taught me at that young age. We figured out what clients we were going after. We wanted ultra high net worth, individual, you know, families. And then get even further into a niche from there. If you know who you're trying to serve and then how you're trying to serve them, a lot of these problems go away. A lot of the problems of, hey, we keep running into this problem, it's because you're trying to be too broad and you're trying to serve everybody. And if you have one specific, you know, the example that a lot of people give for a niche, you know, if you're going after airline pilots, the performance report, they all have the same questions. And so you can streamline the delivery of your service to them. They all, you know, if your clients are all having the same questions, you only have to be ready to answer a subset of questions for those. If you're trying to, I'm going to have divorcees, I'm going to have business owners, I'm going to have retired, you know, people going into retirement, younger couples trying to save for education. It's too broad. And so the technology decisions get way more difficult when you're trying to serve that many people. The agendas for your meetings, you have to have all kinds of different agendas for meetings. So the tighter you can get around who you're serving and how you're serving them, all of these, a lot of these problems go away.
Yeah. I felt that pressure when I was a young advisor and I was focusing on assets under management.
Yep.
When we added financial planning to our practice as a standalone offering, meaning I'm not selling a specific product anymore, I'm selling a process. What I found is that the process holds for a business owner. Well, I don't care if you own a dental practice, you know, you're a lawyer, a manufacturing company, like if our process is repeatable and scalable, but that could be just me avoiding niching, which, you know, I think there's a fear in niching of like, but I'm going to miss out on other stuff. Is it mainly a process question? Like whoever you serve, your process needs to scale well, or truly do you need to pick a specific demographic and just say, we serve this one group really well?
If you have a defined process, you just need to turn down clients that are asking you to go outside of that process. Again, right. you're trying to be all things to all people. So you can come at it from both ways. I'm going to pick the niche client that I'm going after and figure out a process that works for them. Or you can say, this is my process, but just be very disciplined around that process. And when someone says, hey, I know you're more of a financial planner, Sten, but I'm really more, I want to really dig into the performance of every position in my account. I really want to talk investments with you all day long. You need to say, you need to have the discipline to say, there's plenty of advisors out there that will talk investments all day long. We're more financial planning focused here. And because again, now you have to blow up your performance report. Everything you're going to talk to this client with versus every other client you have is going to be totally different. So you can come at it from either way, pick the end client first or pick the process, but then in both those scenarios, just stick to, I'm going to serve that client or I'm going to stick to this process.
Got it. So I'm hearing you say, in a typical or average firm, their process bends to the will of somebody else. Like not disciplined in the process side. What else comes up? My mind goes to like hiring. My mind goes to like good financials. Like I think there's all these things that I see popping up that the average advisor doesn't think about or know how to do and really spends a lot of energy avoiding it as opposed to learning it.
Yes.
Categories we can walk through that you find advisors either avoiding, underperforming in that truly to be a business owner? And I'm a business owner. I think I spend a lot of time on this stuff, but I'm still an active advisor. And so there's probably some advisors listening where they're like, I can't quit my job. And I know some advisors have done this. They've kind of eventually given their clients away to the firm and they're now truly running the business.
Yep.
I think most of the people we're talking to now are still holding both to some degree.
Yep. I think this is why EOS has gotten so popular in our industry, because it really forces you into thinking about your org chart. And it tells you to put the positions in there first before you put people's names in there.
Yeah.
And so you're sticking to your process. I need someone that can do this part of the process and this part of the process and this part of the process. And then you go find the people that can fill those boxes on the org chart, as opposed to a lot of, especially in the early days of your firm, this goes for advisors or any business. I'm just going to go hire really smart people. And we'll find a role for them. And that'll work in the early days. But as you get bigger, you really need to find this is what you're doing here. And Sally, will be much more productive if you're just rinse, repeat, and you're kind of doing the same portion of our process. And then Johnny, you're going to do this portion of the process. And so I need specialists. And that allows the business to scale more efficiently. So I think that's where EOS comes in and really opens a lot of people's eyes into structure around the org chart.
Traditional advisors sell products. Elite advisors prospect with ideas. On July 29th at 2 p.m. Central, I'm hosting a free live training with Matt Kemp and Ian Williams on how to use R&D tax credits to open doors with business owners as potential prospects. This isn't a tax lecture, it's a prospecting system. We'll show you who it fits for, how to identify the right opportunities, and how to confidently start conversations that lead to new relationships. Just click the link in the show notes or visit gobeelite.com/RD. That's gobeelite.com/RD. I'll see you there. I've been to some like coaches before. I went to an event in Vegas once and I found myself in the audience getting frustrated when somebody comes in and they position like the ultimate goal and they see where you are and they're like, just do it. And you're like, No, I think there's a lot of things that happens in between where I am and that. Like, you're oversimplifying it. That what I heard you just say is like normalizing, hey, there's some things that'll work at the beginning. And if you do it that way, it doesn't mean you're like a bad business owner, but you don't want to stay there in that season for too long. And the ultimate goal, I would say most people listening would agree with this, like, could you build a business that could thrive without you? Like, not just survive, like Sten can go on vacation for 2 weeks and the world doesn't fall apart, but like, is it sustainable and healthy without your constant presence? Therefore, you are truly more of a CEO than just a business owner with a job. I think most of our audience would be like, yeah, that sounds nice. But there's all these things in between, which it sounds like you've had a lot of exposure to at different stages as you were traveling around.
Yeah.
How do we start coaching them up on, like, could we say there's three key areas that most likely need your attention and you need to try to make healthier faster? I think org chart, is it setting good expectations, EOS? Is it, you know, clean data financials? I think most financial advisors don't have clean, up-to-date financials. Like, how can we help our listeners start focusing on, like, what's the next thing I need to do?
Yeah, I think I love that you brought up data. Obviously, in this AI world, you know, I'm laughing that everybody thinks, well, I'm just going to throw an LLM on top of my completely crazy data and it'll solve all my problems. It's going to amplify your problems, not solve them. So yeah, having clean data, knowing it's embarrassing, but the most RIAs, you say, how many clients do you serve? And they say, well, how do you define a client? they can't tell you how many client relationships they're serving because, well, is that entity part of this household or is it, it's a standalone, you know, and how do I define that? So getting your data in order definitely will help scale the business, and understanding, again, how many clients you're serving, how you're serving them, having a clean org chart around responsibilities, not just people, is another.
Is it fair to say with the most successful you've worked with, like, they're usually not like an advisor and one assistant, right? Like, it does require a team to execute in this business at a high level. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, 100%. I've worked with a lot of breakaway advisors coming out of the wirehouse world and starting a firm from scratch. And a lot of them, yeah, they think, well, here at Morgan Stanley, it's me and my assistant, and so I'm going to go start an RIA, and it'll just be me and her, and we're gonna run the firm. And it's like, well, you need someone that's going to handle the copier, you know, you just need someone that's going to handle the phone system and all of that. And then at some point you're going to need a head of HR that all these people are reporting to. You don't want every CSA reporting to you because, again, you're supposed to be focused on your clients. So yeah, the org chart explodes as soon as they leave the captive environment, start their own firm for sure.
Do you, when you've run into these advisors, is it fair to say they're just unique? Like, they're built different. So there's some people listening that are like, that's just not me. Like, I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not a business owner. Or are these advisors that were like, no, I like being an advisor, but I'm realizing I have to learn to be a business owner? And I guess I ask that because, like, some people might exclude themselves from that group. And I'm like, no, I think this is something you can learn. It's just a challenging path.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with, I think we get a little bit on our high horse in the RA industry, and we think that oh, those advisors in the wirehouse world are not as good as us. They're more honest with themselves. I don't want to be a business owner, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. I just want to think about my clients. I don't want to think about compliance. I don't want to think about the technology stack. I don't want to deal with paying the electricity bill, whatever. So being honest with yourself and what you're willing to do. But yeah, realize that if you're gonna start an RIA and you're gonna run a business, at some point you are gonna have to take on the business owner hat and put the advisor hat aside. It maybe it's several years down the line, but you should know that's where you're headed.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I think that, like, the honesty with yourself, I know in my experience, there was different firms I was with, and every time I was at a firm, I would see somebody else doing something. I was like, that looks more attractive than what I'm doing. I'm going to leave this firm and go, I'm not going to sell insurance anymore. I'm going to sell investments. That's exciting. Well, financial planning sounds pretty cool because I want to work with people that don't necessarily want to transfer money to me today, but they're willing to pay me for something. And then I had to leave a firm to go do that. I think part of my journey was, like, I just didn't know what kind of advisors there were to even, like, associate with one early on. But I think it probably is okay if you say, I just like being a financial advisor, outsourcing everything else. I'm going to be part of this big firm. I like the community that comes with it. Like, that is totally fine. I think to even get more granular with that, it's like, you might even say, I specialize in life insurance. I just manage assets. And I think one issue I run into is all these advisors aren't quite being honest with the consumer of like, no, this is really who I am. Like, we all want to say we're all financial advisors, we're all holistic planners. But then most of those advisors, if, you know, an advisor sat in the room with them, they'd be like, I know what you're doing. Like, I know you're just trying to get the insurance sale.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just something I've had frustrated with the industry, where it's like, if you find a lane and stay in it and tell people that's what you do really well, good for you. But I don't know if all of us do that very well.
I spoke to a woman literally last week, and she was saying, hey, I'm thinking of leaving this captive environment. I want to start my own RA. And I said, well, why? And she says, well, the multiples are better and I don't have any enterprise value where I am. And that's the sole reason. And then as we kept kind of digging into it, she says, I don't manage people. I just do not do it. I don't want to manage people. Since you're going to be miserable. You can make plenty of money in this industry. You don't have to be the owner. And well, I don't want to have partners. And it was a crazy conversation, but she just wasn't being honest with herself. And she was going to beat her. She was just going to have problems for herself, trying to fit herself into a box that she just didn't really fit into.
You just saved her 5 years of her life probably from trying to do that.
I don't know if she actually listened to me, but yeah, I tried.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, and I kind of look at the life cycle of advisors. So there's probably advisors listening that are brand new to the business. And it's like, you're still trying to figure out like, who am I? Where do I want to land? I'm hearing so many things about this way is better than that way. I think there's an element of getting this business where it's like, just learn to serve people well, be a good project manager, attention to detail, a great communicator. That's probably where I would say, and I wish I did this early on, I'm just going to focus on building my skills, be less concerned about like where I'm parked, as long as it's not a big issue.
Yes.
And then there's probably part of your career, maybe it's the next season where you're, you know, 5 to 10 years where you're like, okay, now's the time where you've gotten your feet under you, you're probably making some money, and you do want to have some sense of awareness of like what specialty, what type of practice is most appealing, and how can I move in that direction? And then there will come a point where you're like, am I a captive person? I like this vibe. I love the cool trips. I know when I left those big firms and I was RIA and I was like, this is more lonely. Like, man, that trip once a year was super fun and I don't get to see those people anymore. Like, there is always a trade-off. And it took me making a bunch of changes to figure that out. I think there's an easier way if you can just sit in it and just try to understand the business a little bit better.
Yeah. And again, I'm not an EOS salesperson, but that book does such a good job of kind of explaining that these are the things you're going to need to be thinking about as a business owner. And I think someone reading that can realize, okay, yeah, I am. I just want to, this all sounds awful. I just want to be an advisor, talk to my clients all day long and not worry about any of the other things. There's nothing wrong with it.
And I think a lot of these bigger firms now are figuring out ways to help you sell it internally. Like, there can be some value at the end. It may not be as big if you built your own enterprise that can survive without you, that's not interdependent. Like, yes, there's always a version that could be worth more. But I think what I've learned the hard way is like, what is required of you to do that? The nights, the weekends, the calls, the headaches. I'm like, I'm probably more equipped now to advise business owners because I've been through so much of the stuff. So I think that's an upside. But there is a cost to it that I did not understand when I stepped into it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And that you can't sleep at night. The buck stops with you. And you can be very high up in a organization, but if you're not the owner of it, you can sleep better. But there's high risk, high reward. You know, there's a lot of benefits to being a business owner as well. But you have to understand the trade-offs that you're signing yourself up for.
Yeah. Elite advisors don't just consume information, they implement it. That's why we created a free companion guide for every new Elite Advisor episode. A practical tool that'll help you turn today's conversation into real action. Inside, you'll find a concise summary, insights, and actionable next steps you can take to put this to work immediately. Just click the link in the show notes or visit gobeelite.com/guide today. So what are you most excited about these days? Like, what are you spending your time on and what gets you most fired up?
I am most excited about where our industry is, where our industry is headed, and what that means for operations professionals in our industry. I'm a COO at heart. I closed my consulting business a few years ago and went back to being a full-time COO for Coldstream. But I still coach COOs and talk to COOs, and that's what my podcast does, is interview COOs. And so I just, the industry is growing so fast, and in the past it was, well, we need a COO. Let's go to Best Buy and find someone that can reboot our router for us. Like, we'll just pull someone out of Best, you know, so from the Geek Squad, that'll be our COO. And I think our industry has finally woken up to the fact that, no, these are actual business consultants that we have inside of our business, and they're gonna run the business for us. And so I'm really excited about where the COO role is headed as our industry continues to expand.
Is it fair to say this is the integrator most of the time?
Yeah, the integrator, exactly. Yep.
That Rocket Fuel was a great follow-up book, and that really hit home with me. I've had a hard time finding that person, somebody that kind of meshes well. I've realized I don't think there's a lot of them. Yep. I think there's director of operations. I think there's other people that can cover some aspect of that role, but a COO, when I run into somebody like that, I'm like, you're brilliant, you know, because like the way your mind works, like it takes a lot to get to a point where you can be a COO, I think. So how would you coach me up if I'm like, hey, I need a COO. I want to be an advisor and I want to prospect and do the things that I'm really good at, but this business needs to run really smoothly without my intervention.
Yep.
Is it a headhunter? Like, how would you coach me up on that?
It is a tough role. A lot of people ask me, what's the difference between a director of operations and a full-fledged COO? And I say, well, you need both at different times. The director of operations you want to hire, if you just say, there are tasks on my plate that I need to hand off to somebody, and I just want this person to be task-oriented. And hey, sure, get this stuff done. Let me just hand these tasks to you, and you can go knock those out. The COO is a few levels higher than that, in that I need a strategic thinker that's going to think through, again, who our clients are, what our career paths for our employees, what that specialization is within our organization. Again, it's taking a lot of things off of your plate, but it's taking like the strategy of the business off of your plate. So it is a tough role to fill. And yes, I know headhunters are expensive, but I do think that for that role specifically, using a recruiter is probably the best way to go.
Yeah, I did have a client service associate that was kind of maybe going to head to a director of ops that maybe someday could be a COO. And the path I put together was like a 12-month to 18-month from client service manager to director of ops. And I realized in that process, wow, there's a lot more to this than I thought. And 12 to 18 months was almost too fast. And they came to me and were like, I think it's too much. Like, giving them the ability to settle in a role and do great at it before I push them to the next one. And so that was a mistake I made, of being like too aggressive with their development, because some of this stuff, I mean, you've taken years and years to get good at that job. I want to have that career path, but I think some things just take time.
Yeah. You definitely need experience. And my role now as COO, when we first left Maryland, started that RA many, many years ago, my title was director of operations, and I got that role simply because I knew who to call when the copier ran out of toner. And I knew to run into the server room and reboot the voice over IP phone system or whatever. Like that, again, it was very task oriented. My role today as COO at Coldstream, I'm more of a coach. I don't really have my fingers on the keyboard very much. I have 7 direct reports, and they're running different divisions. You know, they're department heads in their own right. And I'm just removing roadblocks for them and kind of coaching them and pointing them in the right direction. And, hey, I think you should go left here instead of right. It's a totally different role than when I was, the one buried in the server room.
Yeah, that's great. And then you're just hoping everybody doesn't figure out how easy it is to push that button.
Yeah, right. Right.
So you said 7 departments. Like, for a firm of your size, like, what are those departments? How do you break that up?
So I have IT reporting to me. So that's just like, you know, how does your laptop work? I have performance reporting, all things in the performance reporting tool. So they do trading, billing, and performance reporting. So that reports to me. Client service, which is really the custodial relationships So that's the opening of the accounts, the money movement, that sort of thing. Client service reports to me. Compliance rolls up under me. We have our data team. That's really Salesforce. We run all of our processes through. So the data team reports to me. We have a M&A integrations person that reports up under me. And I'm missing one in there, it's just all the back office functions of the firm report up into me.
Nice. Advisor development, recruitment, coaching fall under? Like, is that HR?
We have a chief growth officer, and that's where they're doing all of the coaching they go to the chief growth officer and say, okay, I've got a prospect and this is what they're looking for. And this is our competition. And how do I, you know, what's the value prop and how do I explain that to this prospect? And so it's our chief growth officer.
That's great. That's helpful to see, because I think there's firms, I know mine too, like I have to combine some of these. Like I don't have seven distinct leaders under me or COO running it. And so I think that's the issue, is this is probably one person or one department for some people listening.
Sure.
And I guess the goal over time is that as you get larger, you want to get better at delivering value, like there should be some separation in some of these duties over time.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, when we first started all those years ago, at that RA, I was the compliance officer. I was touching all the buttons on the performance reporting tool. I was involved in the billing. So yes, it was me as director of ops. I'm doing a lot of those functions myself.
Yeah. I think for me, I have three kids. You know, there was a time in my career where I was like, I'm just studying for my CFP and working. And then life gets busier. And I think based on some of my story, it's like, I want to have balance in my life, but man, I still have big dreams when it comes to business. I want to help a lot of people. And a natural skill set for me, I was one of those where it's like, hey, I can just run far on my own. But then you hit a point where you're like, I can't do more on my own. And so I was like a reluctant hirer as an advisor. I was like, I didn't sign up for this. Like, I just solve problems and I'm really good in a room with somebody and I can get people to say yes to me. But then I read through it, I was like, wow, if I do want to grow, help more than 50 people, I need help. Wow, I need some more help. I can't ask this one person to do six people's jobs. And so I wish in hindsight I was a little more receptive and proactive with this. But for everybody listening, like, if you don't entertain this and try to get better at this and ask for help in this, it's not if you'll run into an issue, it's just when. And how big is, how difficult will it be before you're forced to solve it? And that's just based on my personal journey. So I'm trying to be more proactive these days about, like, what are better business owners doing? You know, if Matt was here, what would he tell me to do? Like, I try to think that way much better than I used to.
Yeah. I've written about it a lot. I've spoken about it a lot at conferences and things, but different parts of your business's life cycle, you're going to be focused on profits, and in other parts of your life cycle, you're going to be focused on growth. And so in some, you're going to make conscious decisions. You know what? In the next 12 months, we're investing into the business. I got to hire a bunch of people to get, you know, and get us ready for that next growth phase. And then it's other parts of your life cycle. You say, we got to boost our profit margins up. We've got to cut some of the expenses and not fire people, but, you know, we've got to tighten the belt. And until we get a few more clients, until the revenue goes up, we can't hire any more people, you know. So you've got to, it's always a yin and yang, and you've got to do kind of have an ebb and flow to it.
Sure. Matt, I wonder, as we wrap up, if you were almost to just concisely communicate, like, all the things you've learned when it comes to operations, efficiency, behaving like a business owner, what would you leave all of our listeners with?
I'm a broken record. I think it really comes down to getting tighter on who you're serving. I think a lot of your headaches go away if you tighten up the profile of a client that you're serving and how you're serving them. You need less people. You need less diversity of technology solutions. So if you go and look at your book and say, man, some of these clients just don't fit the model, the process that we were talking about earlier of how we're delivering service, and you pull those on the edges, your business can grow a heck of a lot faster.
Yeah. When you say that, I think, like, you get to pick the challenge you face. One challenge or fear is, like, there's not enough of the person I really want to serve, so I'm just going to serve everybody. but the pain you feel is like, now I'm serving everybody and this is just really disjointed. Or I'm going to choose to serve somebody with a really efficient process. Now the challenge is I have to figure out how to go find more of those people.
Correct. Yep. That's exactly right. Yep.
Good deal. Matt, I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.